Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, hosting the show for more than 8 years. I'm also the founder of Yes to Life, the UK charity that's been promoting the adoption of integrative medicine for cancer for almost 20 years. My guest today is a naturopath who specialises in working with hormones. As someone who's been through cancer herself, Nicola Corcoran also specialises particularly in cancer support. Hi Nicola, delighted to welcome you as my guest on the Yes to Life show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Today we're going to talk about hormones and cancer, and I want to start out by asking, well, a lot of people understand that hormones or things that act like hormones have quite a bit to do with cancer and its progress. But as someone who's focused in this area for quite a while, how important a player in the field would you say hormones are?
Well, I think there's a danger that we demonize hormones, and the reality is we need them. But the truth of the matter is it's a very personal arena. So I think everyone who's had a cancer diagnosis with hormones involved should be looking at their own propensities for how they use hormones and what their level of hormones is, if they're in balance. But really, it's about the pathways that we're using to detox.
Okay, well, we're going to dig into all of that stuff. Just before we get to the hormones, you're a naturopath, and there's a lot of training in that, I understand. What made you want to go in that direction particularly?
So, well, as you know, I had a cancer diagnosis, which is, I'm coming up to 14 years past my diagnosis.
Is it 14 years? Amazing.
Yeah. And I was very lucky on my diagnosis to be looked after by a very close friend who was a naturopath. And her way of working just resonated so fully with me that it was not about hammering my body or really focusing on cancer, but it was about bringing balance back to my body and supporting that. And taking responsibility for my health.
Right. Okay. An important aspect. Yeah. So just to be clear for anybody who's never consulted a naturopath, maybe you'd like to tell us about the resources a naturopath draws on and summarize the kind of basic tenets of naturopathy.
Sure. Well, a big part of it is about education. It's about asking the body to heal. So using your own natural innate resources to heal. I tend to focus quite a lot on root cause as well, which I know most naturopaths do. So why is this happening in your body specifically? And it's about asking the body to heal and come back into a state of balance.
Right.
I would tend to use diet, lifestyle and supplements as ways to approach healing on an individual unique basis.
Right. Okay. That's very clear. Okay. And obviously, you've talked about it being something that very much resonated with you as a modality for helping people. In this particular arena we're going to be talking about today, hormones, how effective do you think you can be in helping people with hormone imbalances or hormone problems?
It's hugely effective to work this way. So when we're doing specific testing alongside a full consultation and listening to symptoms and listening to history, but particularly I would say when using something like the Dutch test, which is the dried urine testing of the complete hormones, you can see someone's propensity for how they're shifting hormones and their imbalances beautifully. And it's very, very easy to change. Well, I say easy. We have to work, but we can change those pathways. I see it all the time with people. And people will have clues about whether they have hormone imbalance. Let's talk specifically about women with hormonally driven cancers. Many women have had difficult periods their whole lives. The way they move through menopause is interesting. Environmental factors, how they're living is interesting. That really impacts hormones. So we can have a huge impact on hormones. Yes.
Interesting. Okay. I'm sure people would be interested to hear a little bit about your story of what happened and what part naturopathy played in giving you this amazing long remission and good health.
So, well, my cancer was estrogen and progesterone positive cancer of the breast. I had a quite diseased breast. So I had DCIS, which is ductal carcinoma in situ. I had two tumours of actual carcinoma, and I had Paget's disease of the nipple. So for me to have a mastectomy was quite an easy choice, but I was quite ill at the point of my diagnosis. I had had swine flu and I was very underweight. So I actually went for my mammogram with no knowledge of mammograms, of cancer, of anything, but I went in a wheelchair.
Wow.
I was very poorly, and the idea of having standard therapy to me, I didn't feel that I would survive that, if I'm really honest. I was in a very unwell state, and I had been for a long time. But what appealed to me about naturopathy was this idea that I hadn't been listening to the signals my body had been sending me. I was totally out of touch with my body. I didn't know anything about food. Everything I thought I knew, everything I thought I was doing, I was a vegetarian, you know, I was getting it wrong. I was getting it wrong for my own unique body type, for my own biochemistry. So what naturopathy taught me was, well, hang on, why are you not listening to these symptoms? And I started to feel better very, very quickly.
Really?
And that to me was like, okay, well, let's just keep going with this. Let's keep going and seeing how far, how well I can get. And I never really stopped doing that.
Right. Amazing. Well, it is very striking when the picture you're painting there of being seriously unwell in the state where you wouldn't even think you'd survive treatment. And then your long remission and you're looking incredibly healthy and well today. It is quite a testament, really, isn't it, to what you can achieve with listening. That's a very important message, really, to people. I think you're right. It's all too easy not to listen, isn't it, and just to batter on the way, either we're used to going or the way we want to go, or there's something driving us on in the same direction relentlessly, despite all the messages of our body protesting at what we're doing. So, yeah, interesting. So, in a way, you as a naturopath are helping people to listen to their bodies.
Absolutely, 100%. And you know what I love, Robin, is when we start to work this way because we've been almost cornered by chronic disease, I notice that when people start to listen to their bodies, their whole family dynamic shifts. Because there's a re-education. So some of the things, like you're saying, some of the reasons we are propelled forward not listening is because of the language we use in our families, or the way that we've been brought up, or our education, or our job, or our response to stress, or whatever it is. We keep treading a path, and like you say, it can be challenging to unpick that.
Yeah.
Work. I mean, I find it exciting and really energizing work, but when you're faced with chronic disease, and particularly with a cancer diagnosis, it can feel like too much work. And if you're used to historically handing the responsibility for your healing to a doctor or another,
that's
the easiest place to go.
Right. Yeah, interesting. So, yeah, it's two things. It is work. You know, there's no doubt about it. Any change takes quite a lot of effort to create some momentum in another direction. But also, of course, there's usually something hiding there that you didn't really want to look at, which is the reason you're carrying on doing the same thing, which suddenly comes to light when you start to make changes and you have to face up to something or other. I think that's another huge aspect of it, the kind of emotional deal in the whole thing.
I agree with you. And actually, I see for many people, it's not only their diet, their nutrition, but it's about the environment they find themselves in. And that could be in a relationship. You know, it could be lots of things that are difficult to extract yourself from.
Boom.
Mm. So these things go alongside then. Do you find yourself working with other practitioners to help in other ways at the same time?
Very much. Yeah. Very much so. Yeah, I feel like a beautiful network of practitioners that I work alongside. And that is whole body healing, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's how we, if it's body work, if it's energy work or psychotherapy, or, you know, there's lots of different modalities that I think work beautifully alongside naturopathy.
Mm, great. Okay. So today I was kind of hoping you're going to educate me on a topic that I'm very ignorant on, the Dutch test. Now, it seems to be a mainstay of your work. It's been referred to over and over again on this show. People are always mentioning it. And I think, yes, that Dutch test for hormones. And that's about all I know about it. Yeah, I never got beyond knowing that it's a well-respected hormone test. In fact, it's only in preparation for talking to you today, I even found out what it stands for, what the acronym Dutch means. So anyway, having admitted that, can we get straight in there? Can you tell us what it is and how you go about it?
So as you just said, it stands for, well, Dutch dried urine testing for complete hormones. As such, it's a urine test. It measures metabolites of hormones loosely, but so much more than that, which I'll get into. But what I love about the Dutch test is, I mean, I do like testing, but I like testing to look at patterns. The problem with serum testing, as we know, is it's a moment in time. And the body's constantly shifting to maintain a state of homeostasis. So testing in isolation is not necessarily helpful. But something like the Dutch test, we're looking at the body over a 24-hour period. And it very much shows propensities and what's happening. And it shows us that through metabolites or hormones which come out of the body in the urine.
Okay, interesting. Let's just pick apart a little bit of that. So you're saying, okay, most tests, serum tests, which means, you know, a blood test, say, are a moment in time, and you just see what's happening at that point. And if you did it in the morning, it might be different to if you did it in the evening. This is a test which is a bit more comprehensive than that, in that it's taken repeatedly over time. So that's one aspect. The other thing is, you used the word metabolites. Okay, so what's a metabolite?
So this is how the body breaks down hormones into excretable components, I guess is the best way to say that. So it gives us stronger clues. So a good example is B12 testing in serum can show us how much B12 is in the blood, but doesn't necessarily tell us how much B12 is in the cell. So you can get false positives. This happens for lots of different things in blood testing.
Okay.
But the Dutch tester shows us the metabolites of B12, which is more helpful for seeing what the cellular uptake is.
Okay, interesting. So there, so B12 is not really, neither here nor there. It's just floating around doing nothing. If we actually take it into the cells and it gets used, then it's helping us. And in getting used, you get an excretion of these metabolites, so if you see those, it's a good sign that the B12 is getting used, and so you're actually metabolizing it. Okay, good. That's nice and clear. Thanks very much. There's something else about this test. I noticed that, you know, you just said it's a dried urine test. Now, most tests aren't, are they? There's some liquid or another is going off, and there are problems with that in itself, aren't there?
Well, the thing about the dried urine testing that's brilliant is you basically urinate on test strips and then you dry them out and send them. So, yes, they're much more stable. If you get to the point that you, for some reason, can't post them, you can freeze them. So I find this is helpful for my patients who, we don't like to call them patients, let's call them people I'm working with, who maybe can't get to a post office. And that's difficult when you're doing at-home serum testing. You have to post it on a Wednesday. You have to get the first post. It becomes a stressful thing. And I don't want testing to be stressful. We don't want to raise stress with this way of work.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I've done that myself. And yeah, you have to get it in the right post on the right day so they get it to the lab on the right day and all this stuff. And quite often, your little sample is traveling to the States, say, for a test. So the whole thing's quite a balancing act, really. Which is obviously much simpler if you've got something that really it doesn't matter if another day goes by.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm going to ask another basic question now, all right?
What?
The Dutch test always seems to be referred to in the context of women, but of course, us men, we've got a few hormones too, although which of them and how many is an important facet of the differences between men and women. Is this test at all relevant to men, or is there another one for this?
There are other tests that may be more relevant to men, but in the context of me working with people largely with cancer, obviously because of my cancer history, the Dutch test for men can be incredibly useful for men with prostate cancer.
Good.
Really, really useful. I should clarify, with the Dutch test, there is more than hormones. We can see lots of different body systems. So we can get an idea about the adrenal health, thyroid health, maybe gut health, its patterns throughout the test. And I have a couple of people I'm working with prostate cancer where their hormone patterns are really not great. And I can see that as a causative or partially causative factor towards their cancer. So it's brilliant work. And also, Robin, it's worth saying at this point, for people who are on blockers, aromatase inhibitors, or for men who are on blockers, it can be really helpful to show if it's properly blocking those hormones. If
it's working, the medication's working, right? Okay, very interesting.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with Nasal Guard for pet lovers. Nasal Guard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try Nasal Guard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, you always use these tests for general health anyway, but let's just talk about cancer for a minute. So you're saying there are particular applications, particular ways in which the information that comes from these tests tells you something about cancer and its progress and its momentum. So do you want to go into that a little bit more and just tell us what you're reading from these tests and what it's telling you?
Sure. So estrogen and progesterone ideally need to be in a good balance. So estrogen is a hormone which tells the cell to go, you know, grow, proliferate. And progesterone is a hormone which opposes estrogen. So the first thing we have to look at has someone got a lot of estrogen and very little progesterone? And by the way, I would always be looking at why that might be. Yeah. And I can talk about that a bit more later. But so that's the first thing. But the second thing is many women in menopause, as we know, get hormonally driven cancers at a time where they have low estrogen. So then we can look at what is happening to the estrogen in your body. So the body moves estrogen out. It detoxifies the body from estrogen through pathways in the liver and the gut.
Okay.
Now, phase one detoxification of estrogen creates quite pokey, unhelpful metabolites. And so we need those metabolites to be protective rather than potentially problematic. So this is how we try to encourage the liver to use better pathways to move estrogen out more efficiently. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So balance keeps coming up, this word. We said it a lot of times already. Do you want to talk about hormone balance a bit and why imbalance occurs in the first place?
Sure. So balance, well, estrogen dominance is a real problem now in this day and age because so many things mimic estrogen. So we have xenoestrogens, which are synthetic estrogens, which come, you know, from all sorts of things. We have them in our toiletries. We have them in our cleaning products. And those things will sit very strongly on estrogen alpha receptors in the body. So where I've said to you, estrogen is like a go-go proliferate. The xenoestrogens are more powerful. And also the contraceptive pill is another version of that. So synthetic medical hormones that are estrogen are very, very powerful. And they will nearly always come down this unhelpful 16-OH pathway.
Interesting.
It could also be that you have a natural propensity, I mean, I have this, to clear estrogen slowly. So historically, that wouldn't have mattered because you would have probably had limited amount of estrogen in your life.
All right.
But now we're living in this situation where there's an estrogen overwhelm. So people like myself can find that quite difficult to move.
Right. So the imbalance in this case is acquired. It's not something you're producing. You've actually acquired it from the environment. And it's not proper estrogen, but it has the same effect.
Yes, a more potent effect. And something else I'm seeing that's really interesting to me is that people who are gluten intolerant or potentially exposed to a lot of glyphosate, which is, you might know as Roundup, you know, a toxic herbicide, they also move a lot of their estrogen down this 16-OH pathway. So you can see that in the test. It's really interesting.
Okay. Very interesting. So look, let's go back to another very basic question, and we sort of gone straight into this whole arena talking about hormones, but we haven't actually really described what a hormone is what its role is in our body, why we have these hormones and what function they perform.
That's a good question. So they essentially are chemical messengers
right
in the body that instruct cells to work in certain ways.
Right.
Simple answer to that.
Okay. And as we've just been saying, the important thing is not... it's about the ratios between them. That seems to be the most important thing. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Because you can have low levels of estrogen but still be estrogen dominant. Or you could have low levels
right.
of hormones but still be detoxifying them poorly.
Mm. So if balance is the most important thing, is level important as well? I mean, if we have all our hormones are low but they're in balance, is that fine?
Well, it becomes potentially problematic as we get older because heart health and bone health for women is a really important factor for longevity. If you have no hormones, that's a problem. So after menopause, I realize I'm in this arena very much for women at menopause, but I work a lot with women at that age who have had cancer diagnoses. So that's really my area of expertise. But as you get to menopause, your ovaries stop producing hormones and your adrenal glands take over. So for this to happen, there needs to be, guess what, in the body, balance. We need to have adrenal glands that are functioning optimally. We need to be eating adequate fat. We need to have adequate B vitamins and protein. So again, this is the way that the body will compensate because we do need those hormones. And so sometimes when I see people who are on hormone blockers, sure, we're blocking the cancer from using the estrogen. But in the long term, this could cause more problems for the body because we need the hormones.
Yeah, that's right. You can't just turn the tap off on something which is part of our essential functioning. Yeah, that's very interesting. So obviously, people these days consciously make decisions to change the balance of their hormones by taking hormones. What have you got to say about that? Is this broadly okay or is it a bad idea or what? What's your take on it?
I think it's a terrible idea if you're not looking at how you're using it.
Yeah.
It's a really very dangerous idea for people who have never had cancer to be doing that without seeing how they're using it. And I see this all the time. When you do a Dutch test and you can monitor how you're using those hormones, I don't have a problem with HRT actually at all. We're not body identical HRT, which mimics exactly the hormones that we naturally make.
Right, so it could be okay for someone's general health, provided it kind of fits their body, the way things are, their status, hormonal status, and it's not going to just completely put them out of balance, in fact.
Absolutely. And there are other things we can do, obviously. So when I'm working with people who have terrible pathways, we would work firstly to improve that, but then we might use plant-based estrogens. So where I said to you that the synthetic estrogens are very potent and they sit on those alpha receptors, estrogen receptors, plant-based estrogens are much more gentle, and they sit on what's called an estrogen receptor beta, and that's much more gentle on the body. So it gives you the benefit of estrogens, but in a much more gentle way.
Okay. All right. So understanding a little bit more. So maybe could you give us an example? Someone you've helped recently who's come along to you, preferably somebody with cancer, so as it relates well to our listeners here, and who tell us about what you found out about their hormonal status and what you did about it.
Okay. So I have got someone I'm working with at the moment who had breast cancer. She had very fast phase one detoxification of estrogen and very slow phase two. So what that means is the phase one metabolites are very toxic, and we need the phase two to be optimal to move those toxic metabolites out of the body quickly. She also had poor gut health, so she was not passing a stool every day. So that's also important, because once the estrogen is bound up and moving through the gut, we want it to move out quickly. We don't want it to have a slow transit and be reabsorbed, or that can happen through slow movement or through dysbiosis. So with her, we increased fiber in her diet and hydration. She had curcumin to really slow down that fast phase one detox. Now, curcumin is great, and we hear that a lot, don't we, with cancer.
Uh-huh.
Curcumin is very anti-inflammatory. Curcumin is not for everybody when we're thinking about hormones. If you already have a slow phase one, you don't maybe necessarily want to be taking curcumin.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think you're the first person who's ever said there's situations where it's bad news. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, carry on.
So she did find that firstly, we can measure things with mood. So this was a premenopausal woman. So she could measure that suddenly she felt lighter, less PMS, her breasts were less tender. But then when we did the Dutch again, we could see that the hormone component of the Dutch test is nice and visual. So those pathways that I'm talking about are shown visually in a pie chart, and her pie chart was much improved. So I see this all the time. We can absolutely have an effect on the way that we're moving hormones.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink, perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active, available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue, hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Robin, where we were talking earlier about referring to other people, so I do find that people who go for maybe thermo scanning find that they have stability when we're working with hormones. So they might report initially they have less breast tenderness, but then when they go for a thermo scan, they will say, oh, there's stability there.
Mm. Okay, maybe just for anybody who doesn't know, tell us what a thermo scan is.
So thermo scanning is using heat to detect vascular changes in the tissues. So it's not a replacement for a mammogram, but it's a different way of measuring. So as we know, cancer cells often have increased vascularity. So you can see that through heat monitoring.
Right. Because cancer itself puts out lots of blood vessels in order to feed itself. So you can actually see that. Yeah. Okay, great. So I noted with some dismay that the Dutch test isn't just one thing. There seem to be lots of variations on the Dutch test. Are those something you get into? And if so, what are they?
Well, I like to use Dutch complete testing because that works very well with the demographic I work with. So the Dutch complete doesn't only measure sex hormones, but it also looks at the cortisol response.
Okay.
And there's also an organic acids test component, which, where we were talking earlier about B12, it measures the metabolites of B12, folate, glutathione, oxidative stress, and some gut markers, some neurotransmitter markers. So it's really, really helpful to get a good whole picture of the body and what's happening.
Okay, so the other tests are sort of part of that. This is the all-inclusive number that includes all the information you could get from it. Is that right?
Well, there's a cortisol awakening response test, which is slightly different. That has a saliva component, which would measure cortisol. So that's more if you've got someone who is has adrenal issues or long-term stress issues. And I use that less often. There are other tests which you maybe use for someone who's trying to get pregnant. So a cycle mapping test. And then for monitoring, some of my people that I work with use just the sex hormones test, which just reports estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone.
Right. There are reasons to do that. So in particular situations, you don't need that much information, but information is always nice to have, of course. So can you? There's quite a lot of things you listed in this complete test. So what are you finding out from it?
Oh, so much. And the more I work with it, the more I find out. Because it's a test where you're looking at patterns in the individual. So recently, I could quite clearly see some PTSD in someone. Their cortisol was flat throughout the day. They repeat the test, their cortisol is flat throughout the day. This is a learned response to trauma.
Uh-huh.
That can be really useful when we're working with people. There's an idea maybe that people with cancer have very high cortisol and we need to bring that down. That's not always helpful. If you have really, really low cortisol, that's not very helpful to your body system.
Right.
So you need cortisol to be rising and falling.
So that's actually it's a kind of suppressed situation that.
Where, exactly.
Yeah, where just out of habit, it's now kept down. And in the case of cancer, it could be you're actually under-responding to what is actually a dangerous situation in reality.
Exactly.
Yeah. How interesting. Yeah. Anything else in there that you're learning from all those different things that are being measured?
I see quite often thyroid health is poor. That can be seen by the way you're breaking down cortisol. There are lots of body systems that you can really get an idea of what's happening. Sometimes that means we refer for further tests. Sometimes we work with what we have, but also it's really important to work with a full consultation so we can understand someone's symptoms. There is a panel at the bottom of the test where you can list if you're taking medications, hormones, or supplements, which is really helpful.
And that's important from your point of view because those things may be inappropriate.
Sure. And, you know, for example, I'm starting to see antidepressants can have quite a blunting effect on cortisol production.
Right. Okay, and there's still more things that you mentioned there that you're testing for. What, why would some of those be relevant to an investigation of hormones?
Well, I think hormones is part of it. You know, why are hormones in balance? So if we're looking at the gut, we can maybe see there's dysbiosis, which is causing a problem with the hormones. If we're looking at thyroid, we can see there could be problems with metabolism and hormones. But it's a bigger picture that I love that. That's what I like to see with it. So, for example, if someone's got very poor thyroid function, we would expect over time to see low bile production, and then we might see some gut dysbiosis. This is all relevant for cancer because we want to make sure that everything's working.
Right. Yeah.
I think, Robert, I should clarify, when I was doing my healing from cancer, the first couple of years were very much looking at cancer, and it got to a kind of microscopic level of looking at cancer. I was doing the RGCC, you know, the Greek test, looking at circular tumor cells. And in the end, I felt overwhelmed because 14 years ago, there was less information for the layman, you know, published to deal with this information. And I came to the conclusion that my body is infinitely wise. My body can heal a cut, heal a bone, grow a baby.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't intellectualize that healing response. So at that point, I went, hang on, I haven't even looked at my hormones or the bigger systems. I haven't understood that I have hypothyroidism and that I have a gluten intolerance. So I guess what I'm saying is the things that I hadn't looked at were the ways in which I was sabotaging my own healing, my own pathway to cancer, really. That's how I'd got there in the first place.
Very interesting comment. So you're talking about all the things that are underpinning the situation that took you to where you got cancer. And of course, those are the most important things to change in the long term if you want to be cancer-free and free of other chronic diseases. So, I can see that. And cancer has that effect, doesn't it, of taking up people's entire attention in that way. And of course, orthodox medicine gets obsessed with tumours. But, you know, looked at from the standpoint you said of stepping back, well, they're a symptom, actually. They're just what's happened as a result of all the things that have been wrong.
Well, absolutely. They're a symptom of the imbalance.
Yeah, how interesting. But, with that picture you painted of your health situation before you were diagnosed, I mean, you were clearly very unwell. And so there are a lot of things must have been out of balance.
It's really interesting. I think if I look at it from, so at 15 years old, I was put on a pill for incredibly painful periods. And I realized very early on in my cancer journey that if I'd been given magnesium, that would have helped. That would have helped the cramps. But now I know that magnesium helps us to move estrogen down more beneficial pathways. So again, we can pull back out. We don't need to know the science of how we move compounds through our liver. To understand that we need certain food compounds or certain minerals and vitamins that we have evolved through time to need. You know, we've grown along this planet, and these things we need in our diets, and we're not getting them. And what that does to the body is it starts to shift things down non-beneficial routes, or it starts to create imbalance in organs that we need to be working for our health.
How fascinating that you were having a hormonal issue at 15 now, which the solution to it at the time was kind of like, it's pretty heavy duty, really, for a 15-year-old. And there you are years later dealing with cancer and being very unwell. And, as we said, probably pretty out of balance by that point. So, you know, how you mentioned earlier that, well, hormones are all very well, but you need to know what the environment, the context is you're putting them into before you just wham them in there. And obviously that wasn't the case when you were 15. You just were given them and that was that.
And equally, the pill is a very potent estrogen. It's a fake estrogen. It causes all sorts of problems and imbalances in the body. And I was on it for a very long time. I don't doubt that that had something to do with my eventual cancer diagnosis. Because it masked the problem.
Yeah.
My favourite thing actually now is working with young girls who are having painful periods, because I think we can tip their journey into a different direction.
Right. That's interesting. Do you want to just say a little bit about how you go about that?
Well, I would probably do a Dutch test, and I would look at how they're moving their hormones, and, you know, are they vegan? Are they getting enough B vitamins to move these hormones in the proper direction? Are they, is their diet rubbish? What's happening? When young people do, you know, actually quite a small amount of work, small amount of change, and they start to feel the benefits, they're no longer crippled with period pain, or they're not having terribly heavy periods or missing college once a month or whatever it is, when they see those changes, it just gives them, it gives them an empowerment to make further changes. And those changes
are
huge, because they're not grinding their bodies into the corner that is chronic disease.
Right. That's right. It is a change of direction, isn't it? It means you just don't keep heading down the route that's going to end up in you being sick. Yeah. Hugely important. Okay. Could we say a little bit about who could most usefully come to you, the kind of people that you feel you've been able to help a lot in the cancer sphere, so that people can get an idea, oh, this might help me?
So particularly women with breast cancer, because I've been through that and I really understand that. And a lot of the work we do is, like I said to you, diet, supplement, lifestyle. But a lot of the work we do also is talking through the language of cancer, the fear around cancer, the life choices that you maybe need to make a change away from a cancer diagnosis, decisions around surgery or treatment plans within the hospital. It's about empowering people with cancer to know they have choices. And I think you and I both know this. The fact that I've been cancer-free for 14 years in itself is a great thing. I look to people who had been, who had had longevity after a cancer diagnosis.
Yeah.
I look people for advice or information because they were still here. That to me was hopeful, and I think that's important.
Very much so. Okay.
Definitely, sorry, to answer your question more accurately, yeah, definitely people who have had a cancer diagnosis with a hormonal involvement.
Well, just expand on that, because they're involved in quite a lot of cancers, as we know now.
Sure, that's true. So, it's colon cancer, breast cancer, uterine and ovarian cancer, cervical cancer, all of these cancers are really responding, I guess is the way to put it.
Right. But in men too?
Prostate cancer, I have quite a lot of experience. I don't work so much with men, honestly, but that's not a choice. That's just who comes to me.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's good to that men would realise that such a thing could be helpful to them if they're dealing with prostate cancer, which is very typically dealt with blocking drug treatments, which can majorly change the balance of your hormones. So there's something to be looked out for here, isn't there?
Definitely. And I think a lot of men on prostate cancer treatment have a really tough ride of it.
Mm. Why are you saying that in particular?
I think it can change libido and weight and physicality. And I've met lots of men who say they feel quite uncomfortable on the hormone treatment, but they feel they need to be on it.
Right.
So there's a fear element there of not knowing there's an option, which again comes back to this empowerment of choice.
Right. Okay. And so if you say there are options, what kind of thing would they look at then?
Well, firstly, we would do a Dutch test to see what is happening with their hormones and if that is relevant for them. All treatment is bespoke. So there are so many generalizations we make about cancer treatment, but it really needs to be bespoke to the individual. And that's another thing that took me on this path, because I remember sitting in my oncologist's office and saying, well, how many, you know, what's the chance of chemotherapy working for me? And he gave me the answer. And I said, well, and how many women do you have who are my age, you know, have my lifestyle and my height, my weight, who don't smoke? And of course, he couldn't answer that.
Really?
And I realized this is not going to be a bespoke treatment. This is going to be a, there will be a collateral damage.
Yeah.
This treatment. And that could be me.
Yeah, that's right. You want to know which side of the line you fall, really, don't you? And yeah, you're right. I mean, this is the whole thing about integrative medicine, in a way, is that all the figures that are coming out of mainstream science don't take any account of the patient's own involvement in their treatment. And, you know, some people do absolutely nothing other than what they're told to do and is done to them at the hospital. And other people do everything they can get their hands on. And the assumption is there that doesn't make any difference. that's implicit in the statistics like the one you're presented with. We know that's not true. So it's important to realize that. When you're given information, that's, well, something you have to take into account yourself, is that the person giving you that statistic doesn't realize there's a lot you could be doing to help yourself.
Absolutely.
Well, look, there's one thorny question at the other end of this, which you have to ask because it's very important to some people. I mean, testing is great. There's no doubt about it. Knowledge is power. It's really good, but it costs money. I don't know how expensive the Dutch test is, but I do know that some tests are horrendously expensive. How does this one rank?
I'm probably not the best person to ask because I spent a lot of money on testing on myself. I think it's reasonable. It comes, when I do a full report with it, it comes in at about £293, I think.
Okay, I've heard a lot worse.
I've spent a lot worse. And I think it's a valuable test. And I don't love lots of testing. I mean, I always ask the people I work with to get as much free testing as they can from their GP. So, you know, I understand the implications of testing.
Yeah, no, it's really tough for some people. So in terms of ranking this, I mean, my guess is that you would say this is a very important test for some people, not for everyone, but there are some people for whom there would be, reasons to think that they should prioritize this one if they're only going to do one or two. Would you want to say a bit about that?
It really depends on the individual. It depends on what symptoms you're experiencing. It depends on your type of cancer and your age, your history. That's why a good consultation with any practitioner is important. Because if you've never had any symptoms of dysregulated hormones, maybe we wouldn't do that test. Maybe we would start on symptoms.
Right.
What it does do is it helps to really hone a treatment plan. So rather than try some things and say, well, that maybe doesn't suit you, or, you know, there are things I wouldn't give to someone if I didn't know what their hormones. So, for example, for a postmenopausal woman, I wouldn't necessarily give DIM, you know, like a brassica compound, because I don't know what their hormones are doing or what their levels are. And that can really
cause
systemic levels, which may or may not be helpful.
Yeah, you just, you're acting in the dark, rather. Yeah, I can see. So it's obviously great to know. There's no doubt about it, especially from your point of view as a proactive practitioner who's trying to do things to help. Well, you want to know exactly what you're trying to change.
I think there's a real danger when you're using good quality supplements as well, which I, by the way, think is very important. So no fillers, you know, well-absorbed, good forms of vitamin. If you're making guesses with that, that's going to cost a lot of money in the end if these are not the right forms.
Right.
Actually, sometimes it's best just to be clear. And also, I like the idea from the off working well with somebody. And you can do that if you don't really know what's happening.
Yeah, it is interesting. Yeah, so the investment in the test could save you money in the long run by not doing things which are just not going to help. Well, that's quite clear. The other aspect about the test, which you've mentioned during the time we've been talking, is that, of course, it's useful to know what's changed.
Yes.
And therefore, retesting comes up. And what's the frequency with which you would say it was useful to do a test like that?
Round about 6 months if it's needed. And depending on what we're looking at, if it's just hormones, then the sex hormones test is much cheaper.
Right. Okay. So not too bad. It's not something you want every month.
And definitely not.
No. Good. Okay. All right. Well, look, that's been an education. I've learned a lot today. Thank you very much. I hope our listeners have appreciated it too. I'm sure many of them have. I think it's hormones is clearly a subject that's worth understanding when it comes to avoiding or managing cancer. And we do well to wise up on it. So it's been really helpful to talk to you today.
Thank you. That was a really fun conversation.
Yeah, bye-bye.
All right, take care, Robin.
Clearly, hormones are an enormously important topic for many people with some of the most common cancers. So I hope that many of you found that discussion helpful. Thanks a lot for listening today. Do try and join me again next week for another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.